Hi, everybody. It's Richard Zucchi on the Green Peak. And joining us today, we have Stephen Murphy with Prohibition Partners. And Stephen, welcome back. I think you're our most frequent guest.
Thank you. Thank you. I think I hope that an endorsement toward this, I'm just freely available anytime you want.
Yeah, no, you know, it's great because you offer tremendous insight into what's going on in the industry globally. You've run Prohibition Partners for many years now. You also run the Cannabis Europa conferences, which I think the next one's probably in June in London again. You can correct me if I'm wrong if there's an additional one. But
No.
But your reports that come out extremely regularly about different regions and countries, they're always chock full of really good information, data, and insights. And there's been a lot of interesting movement in the industry recently, both positive and negative. And let's start with some of the positives. What's going on with Germany right now?
Yeah, so we recorded this at the start of April, pretty much a monumentous time in the European landscape. We've been looking at and talking about the evolution of the German cannabis industry, or certainly legislation, for the last 2 years. You know, it's gone through various stages in terms of looking at the internal policy, and then having to recognize external policy, i.e. EU and UN and international law, and it's kind of got whittled down to a certain to a certain degree. But what we ultimately now have is anybody who wants can walk outside in certain jurisdictions in Germany and freely consume cannabis without any fear so what this means is you have looked at the law is fairly it's fairly limited. You know, if you're looking at it from a commercial opportunity perspective, what it means is you can grow up to three plants, or you can also at some stage down the road join and become a member of a non-profit cannabis club, similar to clubs that exist in different jurisdictions all over the world. But what it does is it gives certain civil liberties, which hasn't existed before. It gives recognition to cannabis and it as a freely traded product, and it opens up to the conversation discussion not just with cannabis but in drugs and prohibition in general, which is ultimately healthy. Like, look, you're not going to get any overnight success of legislation coming through that is as, even in the US where things are extremely progressive, it's progressive on a state level and not a federal level. So, you know, there's limitations no matter where you look, and everywhere is a stepping stone. This is a stepping stone at the minute in Germany. And look, there's a lot of this debate that, you know, it should have gone further, it didn't go further enough, etc. However, the fact of the matter is it's a monumentous achievement.
Germany is the linchpin for most of Europe, and you know, it's not just a recreational question. There's also been the medical side has been transformed in how the product is able to be dispensed, and that lead. How do you see other countries looking to follow it?
It's an interesting point because you've got say the Minister for Health and Minister of Economics also in Czech Republic, yep, discussing their phased approach. And look, they were like they had a model similar initially to Germany, and then they scaled it back again, similar to Germany, saying we need to somewhat follow here. And now that Germany is legalized, they said, actually, do you know what? Why don't we advance our commercial model now that there is already a stage on a platform for what is to be expected? And why don't we push forward with a more commercial viable market that eliminates all the negative aspects of what ultimately decriminalization allows for, which is a rise in gray market, which who's going to provide the supply of this market when it's when that's still somewhat unregulated. You know, that's the next hurdle, and tackling that would obviously be easier with as part of the initial regulation, but you know, putting the money back in the box is impossible as the New York regulators are finding out.
Yes. And interesting enough, there was also a study out of Oregon yesterday I was reading that they're rolling back some of the freedoms that were granted recently around decriminalization. So the experiments that are going on around the world, some are going, you know, wide open very quickly without any restraint, and others are taking a more moderated approach. Without restraint, it creates issues, but a more moderated approach can also be too conservative. What do you find is the happy point, or the, it's not a matter of happy, is probably the wrong word, but where do you see the median point that most organizations seem to be comfortable with and successful with?
Where
the regulators are happy, the police seem to be able to accommodate, and the market is sustaining properly. What do you see working versus, because everybody hopes for, you know, everybody to operate properly and wide open, but
Canada, like for all the negativity, like Canada is a model where, yes, there's the different provinces have, you know, the distribution issues, but I think overall it has been overwhelmingly positive for Canada. You know, there's a lot of things in terms of how you control, say, things like licensing or, you know, the supply, but in terms of the integration in society and the impact it has, it's been overwhelmingly positive. It's been overwhelmingly positive economically. It's been overwhelmingly positive from a health perspective. It's been positive in terms of tackling illicit trade and redirecting funds, you know, destined for the black market. So, I still think that Canada has demonstrated a very forward-looking program. There's obviously issues around taxation and double tax. There's always issues. You know, of course there is. But in terms of a model that is working, it's not just a stepping stone. I think Europe was always, unfortunately, going to be cautious when it came to adult use. Now there is other, there is other markets in Europe that are a little bit more progressive, or need to be a little bit more progressive, for maybe more economic reasons. Now, generally for health reasons, why we would see a change in adult use, but certainly for economic reasons, places like Portugal, there is a big push behind adult use and full scale adult use where you can get cannabis available, where you can get alcohol. So,
right.
You know, so freely and widely available, and not treating it, you know, as some sort of kryptonized product that can do harm, you know, beyond the obvious. So we're looking now at Germany kind of breaking the camel's back in terms of saying, actually, do you know what? We don't have to have the same level of fear now that we would do in terms of getting our hands slapped or being looked down upon. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, for conservative Europeans, that's always a stigma.
Right.
But it's definitely changing. And the fact, you know, there is a lot of debate and dilemma of, okay, so because of where they had to go to houses and, you know, different parties, certainly different legislators voting on each side, it could be severely impacted, and or there could be a delay on the rollout and so on. The fact that it wasn't just shows and demonstrates that the attitudes towards cannabis across, you know, across the bridge has fundamentally changed, and we're no longer scared of cannabis, but we also, you know, there's the common consensus now, not just the fringe consensus, that actually prohibition is a silly thing.
It is, and it doesn't matter how often we prove it in history, people still think it's a solution for problems, and it never works out, does it? But we do have to take a short break, Stephen, but we're going to be back in a minute on the Green Peak with Stephen Murphy from Prohibition Partners. I'm Richard Zwicky. And we're back on the Green Peak with Stephen Murphy from Prohibition Partners. And Stephen, you mentioned something interesting just a second ago about Portugal and some of the changes. And, you know, a few years ago, the market and the industry were looking to Portugal and Malta as being stepping stones into Europe, that importers would be able to use those two markets in particular to bring products into Europe and then distribute through the rest of the continent. That's changed. As stepping stones, they're no longer important. What's happening to the industries there, and what's transforming in the rest of the market?
Well, I think the offering, you know, they call it GMP washing, I suppose, is probably a way to look at it. Like GMP, you know, there was facilities that's ultimately positioning themselves as GMP washing facilities as a gateway for GACP flower, you know, but would have to be dried in under GMP conditions, but that is, you know, that could be somewhat of a formality, and it's not as challenging as it would seem. But the GACP producers could get access, or certainly could make sales of their products into a GMP. The reality is that this service providers who can offer that service in the UK, in Germany, so the cost and the challenge of exporting and importing to Portugal, producing, manufacturing, exporting and importing to another country, and the added costs added layered on top of that, when you look at the limitations regarding the logistics of cannabis and the control around it, just made it somewhat prohibitive. So you don't have the same volume, you know, in terms of Malta being used as that destination of a halfway house.
Yep.
For GACP flower, you see GACP flower going directly into other markets directly now, and that's. You know, that's a practice that isn't going out of fashion.
It was always the logical course, right?
The economics rule. The economics rule, yeah. But you're also seeing GMP flower come down significantly. So, you know, you're getting companies and you're getting producers who are providing better quality finished product, and you're getting this finished product with more of a trust with patients and doctors. So I won't say there's huge brand loyalty, but brand loyalty is starting to evolve and brands are starting to be recognized. So, you know, they certainly want some consistency, and where you don't finish product on site in the same process, that consistency is hard to replicate. So GMP washing works in certain instances, but it's not, you know, it's not the be all and end all. I think
it's never made more sense, increased, right, as far as a long-term business model or even a pathway into Europe. It never made sense, the whole discussion about needing to go through that process, because at the end of the day, it has to be compliant. It couldn't be any different than other plant materials brought in for production.
No, but it made sense when there was, what, 5 GMP, EGMP certified, you know, back in 2019, where there was 2019, 2020, when there was limited, you know, limited juices. But now you've got products coming into Europe from Uganda, from South Africa, from from all over the world. And you know, it's still in its infancy regarding global cultivation. Like, there's products now coming in from Thailand into via Portugal into the markets, and it's giving consumers, like, I think what the GMP washing, what it gives maybe the non-patient, I would say, a wider variety of products at a cheaper price. So the kind of the quasi-patient probably makes up for a lot of prescriptions every year, and you know, is a mainstay for a lot of clinics. So you know, you look at all the main producers, they all have generic brands, and the if you look at the flower, the naming of those generic brands, or certainly the batch numbers, they differ a lot, because they may, you know, they may benefit from these cheaper processing. But I don't think it's not, as you said, it's not a sustainable strategy. Like, there, it's the you know, GMP, full suite GMP in house processes. The price of that is coming down substantially and what it also does. So you're no longer competing on price. It's easier to manage. You don't have the same level of risk associated with, you know, with the washing or conversion per se. So, you know, you're also seeing EU regulators be a little bit more proactive on going out to international markets on site visits. On, you know, if you were an international producer, you would have to beg, borrow, and steal for a EU GMP regulator to come and pay you a visit. That's also changed as well. They've been probably more cooperative than they used to be.
Yeah, that's very true. And you know, as you look at the research and the data from around the world, one of the things that and we talked a bit about the herky-jerky motions within the industry itself, is the changes that are happening in the US aren't keeping up with the rest of the world. And in fact, a lot of the US businesses are struggling more than expected. What do you see going on that's going to be different in the US from the rest of the world? Or is the US going to end up being an island of a complete different framework? Because, you know, personally, I look at it in terms of, if they go to Schedule 3, it wipes out most of what people have built so far. If it stays non-rescheduled or just as it is in 1, it's going to continue to be a bit of a wild west, but it's going to be hard for anybody to really get ahead long term. And full legalization doesn't seem to be anytime on the horizon. What do you see?
Yeah, it's interesting, because they've, you know, you've seen different government bodies like move towards more favorable policies around cannabis. So is it their a branch of like the military and a branch of the education sector? And then there was one of the large banks, I think like a top 20 bank in First Nation or something like that. You know, so you've seen these small little prongs of potential full legalization, you know, happen or this year. And it's an election year, so you obviously never know. And it's, you know,
there'll be lots of promises about legalization.
Exactly. You know, and there's been, in the Biden administration, there's been lots of record expungements and so forth, which haven't really materialized into anything.
Some did, and that's positive, because a lot of people, you know, especially there's been a huge issue with regards to race around it, the number of people who are, you know, non-white, who have gone to jail for misdemeanors or minor possession issues, is outrageous. And that has to be rectified and resolved.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm still fairly optimistic on a federal legalization. I think there is votes at stake. Mm-hmm. And there is a lot of public support around it. Like, I still think you will have the state opt in as well.
Yep.
I think it's going to work. You know, it's not going to be. And I doubt this will be forced upon the states. But it will eliminate things like, you know, the double taxation. It'll eliminate a lot of the main pain points. So you'll still get the multi-state operators will still have those obviously with strong distribution will have a good head start. But again, your point is very relevant. Like, you know, having to run 20 cultivation facilities opposed to two is pretty different. And so I don't really look, there is no crystal ball in the US, is there? Like, you have to play what's in front of you is slow rollout of state by state, and you know, waiting for federal to happen is not a business strategy.
No, it's,
you know,
not.
Just like just like all the companies who raised for Germany legalization with plans to open up, you know, dispensaries across Germany and so on. And like, I don't know where that money is and how it's being spent, but there is no opportunity to do that in Germany, just like, you know, there is no opportunity for federal businesses in the US. So there is of course a limitation there of what these companies are capable of.
Right. Yeah, no, I think that's very, very true. Stephen, we do have to take one more short break. We'll be back in a moment in the Green Peak with Stephen Murphy from Prohibition Partners. I'm Richard Zwicky. And we're back on the Green Peak with Stephen Murphy from Prohibition Partners. And Stephen, you know, a few years ago, when everything was hot in the cannabis market, and by hot, everybody wanted to invest, everybody wanted to be involved, everything was going on. You used to go to some of the conferences like, you know, the MJ Biz in Vegas, and it was bursting at the seams. And some of that's returning. But the people who are showing up now are more educated in terms of the realities of the market, and they're more sophisticated in terms of the decisions around investments. There's, again, greater attention coming because more of the markets are opening. But what are you looking to in terms of, you know, people who are looking to educate themselves, apart from reading your reports? There's going to be some conferences coming up this spring, which are interesting. And then, of course, in June, there's the big one, which I've always found to be one of the most informative, which is Cannabis Europa in London. What are you looking at?
I'm looking at the new entrants in the room. So for years, we've talked of like getting support from outside the cannabis sector. So it's not just a room of individuals speaking right to themselves and trying to look. Of course, business has to be done. You know, partnerships have to be developed. You know, new investment has to be won over. So of course, there is a networking aspect, but it's also a case of elevating the conversation. For years, we've attempted to bring high level regulators and operators into the space. This year, we're fortunate, joined by not one but two ministers, European ministers, who have been responsible for developing the national policy in those markets and are now, you know, working to harmonize something on an EU front. So, like, these are kind of the levels of discussion that's required, because that is the coal face of change, and not just what we should do, but what is actually happening. The second, I suppose, is the support you get from outside the sector. What I mean by outside the sector is the worlds of pharma, the worlds of tobacco, the worlds of CPG. You know, those yep. who have the resources to make an impact. You know, we can only you can only be so scrappy in a certain size. But it is a David versus Goliath battle, and you need to win over the interests of those sectors. So, you know, one, ensuring that they see it as an exciting opportunity and professional opportunity, but also two, you know, that there is demonstrable evidence regarding the evolution or the potential progress of legislation. So we have a number of, well, 4,500 brands there. Now, some may not put it on their name tag,
right?
But you know, they are there from some of the major sporting manufacturers, from some of the major entertainment brands, from some of the major from food brands and alcohol and tobacco brands. They are there. They are scoping the process, and it's about the conversion of them into advocates, or certainly having a discussion on it, which is the evolution that we're moving towards. So those within cannabis know about cannabis, but we are only a small minority. We need to, you know, we need to take the conversation beyond our existing forums and our existing media outlets. Then that's a challenge we have as a sector. But what's happened in Germany means that it is very much, you know, for lack of another analogy, in your face. It is. You know, if you're in Germany, it is in your face. So if you are a consumer agency who work with Nike and Adidas and whoever else, and they say what's happening on the streets, well, cannabis is happening. It's very much happening. And what's the knock-on effect of that? Well, what's our angle of it? How do we relate to consumers about it? What's our position? You know, do we endorse it? Do we, you know, okay, we're, what else are we in? We're in sports, we're in nightlife, we're in entertainment, we're in music. And quickly, it's, you can see just how quickly this will ultimately spread. And for us, we need to those makers of movements that,
yep,
you know, that go beyond, look what we can muster up in cannabis. Like, look, this company's struggling to pay a 2,000, you know, ad serving invoice.
Yes.
Out there. Like, there hardly they hardly have the resources to change legislation and to lobby, you know, of because that costs proper money. You know, and we need bigger champions, and bigger champions for right or wrong, you know, could write out or wipe out what has been created before them. But look,
well,
give me a sector where that hasn't happened.
Well, exactly. You know, that's the interesting point, is when everybody, and, you know, myself included, started building in the industry, you know, in Canada, we did it in the mid-2010s. But like when I started working internationally in 2017, the expectation was that tipping point of the large CPGs and brands getting involved with government approval was close. And we're closer to that tipping point, but we're still not quite there yet. And it's harder to see, because before there was so much momentum, and now it's become inexorably slow, in some parts due to bureaucracy trying to figure out how to make it work, but in others, it's become a football. The moment it happens, it will transform the industry as a whole, because there's all this pent up movement that is stuck.
Yeah, look, I think there's always going to be burnout when you're overworked and underpaid, and that is that is cannabis, and investors who wanted 100x,
right?
You're like, look, guys, that, you know, you can't work wonders here, or, you know, one of their investments go bad, so they look to you to make it, you know, they look to the other company to make it 200x, and, you know, there's the evolution of expectation is changing as well. Like, no longer are you having investors who think that there is a short-term opportunity, but it's becoming more of a mature, even though it's still very early stage, but a little bit more mature from a potential. And then you have, you know, you're getting better quality management who are grinding it out and waiting for that change. Yes, some are leaving, coming in and out of the sector, but like I would question whether they had the talent to begin with, because we know, you know, for anything to succeed, you need you need a little bit of tenacity and consistency, and you need, you know, that is obviously essential when it comes to hitting your head against a brick wall, which is changing cannabis policy and changing cannabis attitudes and making this a realistic, tangible product, and not just something that, you know, you can consume without fear of being arrested. But with a product that there is actual consumer choice and it's a sophisticated product. Like I went to an event in Spanibus, you know, the Spanibus, right, which is a big consumer. Like for me, if I'm a brand manager with Louis Vuitton, or you know, a brand manager within one, you know, the Unilever, and I go there,
right?
It's so alien. And you know, absolutely, there's such a disconnect between the 90% of cannabis consumers and that 10%. And we can't showcase what the 90% of cannabis consumers look like.
That's very true. I mean, because it is so broad and it hasn't been, the profile is not as
clear. No, the profile is still
spaces. But
yeah, Steve, it's way past you. So
it is. It is. But we are unfortunately out of time for today, but people who want to learn more, they should go visit Prohibition Partners to read through your reports, and should check out the Cannabis Europa conference in London in what are the dates in June this year?
It is the 25th and 26th of June in the Barbican in London.
Great venue, great event. And people who want to learn more, go to Prohibition Partners and they can reach out to you through that as well.
Yeah. And look, lots and lots of, I think over 38 reports freely available on it, from every subject from pet care to the New Zealand cannabis industry. So feel free to check it out and get a little more informed on the sector.
Yeah, by far the most comprehensive resource for independent research. Thanks for joining us today, Stephen. And thanks for being on the show yet again. I think this is visit number 4 or 5, which maybe we'll have to give you like a t-shirt like Saturday Night Live does for the people who become the 5-time hosts.
Brilliant. Yeah, that'd be great.
But no, great chatting with you as always. And thanks to everybody for listening. We'll be back again with you soon. I'm Richard Zwicky.